In this episode of Movie Rollers, we're going to review Blue is the Warmest Color and the Dallas Buyers Club. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yasdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Good evening.
Hello.
How is everybody?
Good.
Good.
That's a mouthful. Blue is the warmest color in Dallas Buyers Book Club. No, see, I can't even say it.
Oh, I know why you did that though, because we're going to review The Book Thief in our next
episode.
Not
your token. Brain scrambled it up.
Yeah.
I hate
how
when that
about
happens.
Dallas Buyers Blue Book Club.
The warmest Dallas Buyers.
We should do like movie review mashups. Yeah. Just talk about like
just
10 movies at one
and yeah.
See what people think. Speaking of listeners, we had a couple of visitors that came with us to see one of these movies.
We did.
Rashmi's sister and niece.
Yes.
So we should actually talk about their reaction to it as well when we review Dallas
okay.
Buyers Club.
Because yeah.
I think
and all I kept thinking, was thank God we didn't take them to Blue is the Warmest Color. Like thank God, not because I think it, not to give my review of the film away, but because of the content. I was very happy not to sit through a film like that with my niece and my sister.
So you're saying it's not a movie families should watch together?
Why don't we talk about Blue is the Warmest Color?
Let's go there first. Who's going to intro it?
That would be me. So Blue is the Warmest Color is the latest film from French director Abdatele Kashish, who previously made The Secret of the Grain. That's the only other movie that I've seen of his. And it essentially is based on the graphic comic book by Julie Moreau called Blue is the Warmest Color. And it's co-written by Kashish as well as Galia Lacroix. And the story revolves primarily around the central character, Adele, who is 15-some years old. And the movie kind of follows her through the next 5 or 6 years of her life as she fumbles and tries to find her way and find herself. Chief among those being her interaction with a somewhat older woman who she happens to meet on the street and has an instant connection with. And Adele and Emma, who is a painter, form this very strong, deep, and eventually sexual connection. And the movie essentially watches what happens to Adele through all of it.
I thought you said sensually watches. Essentially.
Essentially. Okay. And sensually. And very sensually watches.
Very sensually.
The movie, of course, has gotten a lot of buzz, primarily for two reasons. One is because it won the Cannes Palme d'Or, the top prize at Cannes, and the jury led by Steven Spielberg awarded the movie the top prize, but in a big departure from tradition, in addition to recognizing the director, the two lead actors in the movie, the two female actors, Adele Asharchopoulos and Leah Seydoux, were also recognized for their work here. And then the other reason why the movie has been getting a lot of buzz is because of its, shall we say, no holds barred sex scenes, and they're pretty explicit for a mainstream French
film. I've seen milder porn, but yes. Let's talk about that.
We can talk about that. So I can literally talk about this movie for hours, and I'm sure most people can. I mean, there's been a lot of print about this movie if you look in the blogosphere, and I'm glad we all got a chance to see it. It is 3 hours long, and I'm eager to hear what the two of you thought.
So I started by saying I'm glad that I didn't watch this one with my sister and my niece. I think this is an interesting coming-of-age story that looks at growing up in a different way. I think despite the controversy and all of the sexy time, which I'm sure we're going to talk about later, this is a good movie and it does stay with you after you've left the theater. I do, however, question that if this story wasn't about two girls and if it had just been a straight couple, whether it would have gotten the airtime and column space that it's getting.
I enjoyed every minute of this movie's 3 hour running length. Now, like Rashmi's looking at me like with this certain expression, because the movie is obviously very highly sexually charged, but as far as movies go, this is everything that I like about kind of French cinema. They really take the time to develop the characters. You feel like you went on an emotional journey with both of them through their, you know, especially with the main character, Adele, through her, you know, her growing up. This is a character, to me, who was really the heart of the movie in that I really enjoyed her story in particular. I engaged with her in so many ways. And she's not always likable, but I really kind of went on that journey with her. And I think that's what the film was trying to achieve. It took its time doing that, but it didn't feel like it was a long, laborious 3 hours. It was appropriate for the story it was trying to tell.
Yeah, I mean, I like you, Rashmi, this movie stayed with me for a long time after having seen it. And I was trying to kind of analyze in my mind why that was so. And eventually, this is what I came up with, which is that, you know, the very first scene in this movie is of Adele leaving home to go to school. And it's a wide shot. And she's running towards the bus, you know, to catch the bus to go to school. And it's a single take. And she runs towards the bus and she gets on the bus. And then the next shot is, you know, of Adele sitting in the bus. And the camera gets really close to her, like within 3 inches or so of her face. And then essentially the camera stays with her for the next 3 hours until the very last shot when the camera finally lets her go. And so I think this is the equivalent of a stalker movie. I mean, this is, I mean, with all the pluses and minuses that comes with it, and the camera, I mean, the movie literally is with this person through everything that, you know, through the stupid stuff, through the boring stuff, through the exciting stuff, through the despair. And I think it's a very deliberate choice to kind of just stay with this person through the whole time. But, you know, I think by virtue of sticking to this individual so relentlessly, it provides, I think, one of the most exacting portraits of a young life which is committed to the screen. I mean, I really feel like I've known Adele.
Hmm. And it's a rich character. I mean, we follow her through 5 years of her life, and I think certainly the film is very voyeuristic. I mean, let's go to the sex. I mean, this is the next point I've actually written in my note. I didn't think there was a need for all of it, okay? It's 3 hours long and probably about 25 minutes is sexy time. And I mean, and I'm not against it. I think the thing for me is that it doesn't add anything to the story and it doesn't move the story forward in any way. And I guess the question I start asking myself is, and Yazdi, you're right. I mean, I read a lot of stuff about how some people are saying that the two actors were exploited and the director made them do things that they were really uncomfortable with. I can believe that. But the question that comes up for me in a movie like this is the line between art and soft porn almost disappears.
Except for the fact that I don't think this was there to titillate. I mean, I think...
Really?
Mm-hmm. Really. I mean, honestly, I mean...
So what is it there to do?
It's... Because I agree with you that it was a large part of the movie, but it never felt gratuitous to me. I mean, it felt very indulgent. No, it did. I mean, it really didn't feel like it was there just for the sake of being there. I think it was there to communicate the intensity of this infatuation, in fact, that Adele had with the character Emma for a large part of the movie. And then the infatuation that the two of them had for each other. It was a bit much in terms of how long. I mean, there were, I think, at times I felt, you know, okay, let's move on to the next scene. And then, you know, another orgasm kind of pops up on screen. But so I didn't find it offensive in that way.
And I didn't find it offensive. I just found it dull. I just found it, for me, it just didn't move the story forward. I just kept saying to myself, why is it here?
It could have been done with less, I think.
Way less.
But.
So again, I mean, honestly, I can talk about this for an hour, but I'll try to keep it short. I think the director wanted his camera to be kind of a mirror and just watch everything that happens with Adele. I mean, there are a lot of scenes in the movie where really nothing happens. It just follows Adele while she goes and has a drink or while she's at a bar.
Even while she's sleeping.
Or even while she's sleeping. And I think the director, by that same token, by virtue of wanting to be a mirror, wants to also mirror Adele's sex life and every sexual situation that she is in.
Flustered?
You know, but I think by staying so close to it, I think his intention was to, again, be a mirror to what's happening in her life. But again, because it gets so close and it stays there so long, it does become creepy. It becomes a little voyeuristic. And I don't know, I cannot be the judge. I mean, God knows, those are amazing scenes. I mean, they are amazing scenes. I mean, I commend the two actors. I commend the two actors to make it so believable.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think a lot of it is even believable. I don't know how much of it is acting and how much of it is real. And I think that speaks to, you know, what a great job it's done.
It crossed the line,
I think,
in terms of what they did to simulate sex, because I don't think, well, look, physically.
Right. So I heard that there were actually prosthetic genitalia that were provided to the actors. Yes. I mean, it begs the question again, if you have to go to the lengths of providing prosthetics, why bother? Like, why is it important?
I mean, I think, again, he's trying to, I mean, I think the director is trying to demonstrate that sex is a very big part of that relationship, at least initially.
Yes.
There is this tremendous sexual attraction. I mean, I still don't know, having watched the movie, and I don't think Adele knows either, whether she's gay or not. But regardless, you know, she's really very, very strongly attracted to Emma. And I think within the context of that's a big driver. That's a big facet to the relationship. I understand the need to portray it, but I mean, we all watched it together. There were a few scenes where, you know, the people in the audience were giggling, and it wasn't because people were giggling because of they were uncomfortable or because of nervous laughter. They were giggling because it was silly. There's a lot of, like, you know, slapping of behinds. You
right.
know? There was a lot of, like, incessant slapping of behinds, and it, I mean,
and noises.
So, which was kind of interesting. I don't know. Maybe I should watch more porn. Maybe that's
got to be the quote of the year on Movie Wireless.
Watch more porn.
More? Is that possible? Yeah, Yasti?
Is that even possible? No. But anyway.
I mean, other than that, I mean, if we've kind of moved on from the, we're kind of like the film now. I mean, other than that, I think, you know, the film was very well acted. And I really like the aging process of the characters. I think they did a really good job of just aging the both of them in a really realistic way. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I found that very subtle because I couldn't actually understand the time frame until some of the dialogue actually revealed to me that, oh, this was like years later. This isn't just, you know, the next week or the next month. So I found that a little confusing at times. And it was only kind of later on, as I thought about the movie, that I kind of really, you know, towards the end, really understood the span of time that had elapsed.
Yeah, I think the movie is deliberately very fluid about time. It doesn't really give you, there are a few dialogues here and there where you even realize, oh, it's been 3 years, you know, or it's been 4 years. I mean, until somebody said that, I thought, you know, we're talking about things transpiring over maybe a month. So, yeah, it's deliberately very fluid about time. I think more than anything else, what I really liked about this movie is, you know, that it so successfully captures this all-consuming love, you know, and all of it, you know, the ecstasy of it, you know, the despair of a first heartbreak. I mean, how many scenes are there where Adele literally has, like, snot running through her nose because she's so heartbroken and she's crying and she's sobbing and, you know, and this kind of stuff can come off looking, you know, other movies try this, and it all, you always feel, you know, of course it's an actor who's crying because they're supposed to feel sad because their heart is broken, but this movie really captures that that point where you lose dignity,
and
where you lose, you're willing to do anything because you're so heartlessly besotted by this love which is so consuming you.
And they're very raw performances. I mean, I think they're really good portrayal. I mean, Yasti, that's a really good point just to illustrate how great this actress is.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she's really good.
Yeah. I mean, Adele Exarchopoulos is, I mean, it's as good as a performance as I've seen in anything this year.
I mean, I want to say both on the acting and, I mean, I think the movie is very deliberately pieced together. So it's just a series of seemingly unrelated events. And at least initially to the first hour, you keep trying to, like, okay, what's going to happen? What's happening next? And I almost had to give up that fight, trying to piece the movie together or trying to find the plot together and kind of surrender to it. And I think eventually I really admired it because by avoiding an obvious kind of structure of a plot, although, you know, some might argue there is a very strong plot element, but it gives it a very lived-in feeling. You feel like you're living with her.
Hollywood can't do this.
Can't do that.
I was just going to say that I mean, I just love that French films don't always have expected linear dialogue and linear story. I love that they never have expected endings.
It's not mapped out using the same beat structure that we're so used to seeing with Hollywood. You know, we don't have a dramatic arc that we can plot thematically as we go through the movie. This movie has ups and downs and ups and downs, and you never quite know where it's going to take you next. I love the fact that French cinema in particular has this ability to do that, to explore those things, to do it over 3 hours. We just don't get that from Hollywood. Even British movies can't do that.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else on this?
No, I mean, I did want to talk about this Adele character just for a second, which is, you know, it's very interesting because she's sort of fascinating for being things that don't normally fascinate you about a lead actor. I mean, you know, she's not kind. She's not particularly smart. She's not ambitious. But yet, you know, by virtue of all her complexities, you know, you can judge her and all the bad mistakes she makes, all the bad choices, her impulsiveness, you know. But then you start to recognize little pieces of your own life in that, you know. And I think that's so hard to do in cinema, where something breaks away from the tether of a script or a tether of somebody's idea of, you know, what a character should be and just is, you know. And I think, you know,
she doesn't seem to have a goal in mind in terms of the script.
Yeah.
You know, she's not aiming for something. She's not heading in a particular direction.
But we're endeared to her because of that, right? Because like you're saying, Yassi, that mirrors a lot of people's lives. And I think that's the beauty of this film in the coming of age essence, that there are many people who are goalless and aimless and just kind of potter through.
Yeah. And, you know, she starts off at the movie lamenting the fact that she doesn't feel anything. She doesn't feel, you know, a bond or an attraction to anybody. And then, you know, towards the end of the movie, she has been so devastated by a bond so strong that she fails to realize how dangerous it can be if she doesn't understand herself well and where she's going. And she's just completely driven to humiliation and despair by this thing which consumes her and that she doesn't understand. And that's pretty amazing.
I mean, I must say, towards the end, it took a different turn to what I was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just for that, it gets one more point extra from me. So with that, let's wind up. So Joe, why don't you go first?
I mean, this is a rock solid 8 out of 10 for me. I really enjoyed its ability to explore a character in a way that I haven't seen any other movie do this year. So yeah, just a really good movie. Be warned, it is an absolute NC-17. Be warned that when you start this movie, it's a little more explicit than one might expect. But other than that, I would recommend anyone who loves good movies see this.
Yes, Dean.
Yeah, I mean, I think this film is what it is because of all its contradictions, just like the main character. I mean, it's exasperating, rigorous, indulgent, devastating, and painfully, painfully exacting, I think, in showing the humiliation that can accompany an all-consuming love. And I've seen very few movies do it. And like you said, Rashmi, it's also a coming-of-age movie. And, you know, is Adele wiser at the end? You know, I'm not sure, but she certainly is more experienced. And I think, you know, as overwrought as this film is, it's also profound in many ways. And I think it gets very close to real life, and few movies do. So I give it an 8 out of 10. I think this is what cinema can be, and people should seek it out.
So I guess I wasn't as blown away as both of you. I don't think it's a bad film by any accounts, but I don't think it's the greatness that everyone else is hailing it to be. I do applaud it for being a alternative coming-of-age movie, but again, I keep going back to the fact that if this was a movie about a straight couple with the same lead character, would we be as enamored by it? And I think that's got something to do with all the greatness that people are saying about it. So for me, it's probably about a 7 out of 10.
Well, yeah, I have to disagree with you there. I mean, I think the sexuality of the character isn't that important here. They don't go there in terms of exploring. I mean, at the beginning of the movie, I guess they touch upon some of the things of, you know, some of the self-discovery things, the realization that your sexuality is not the same as everyone else's. But it's not a movie about that.
No, but she has to hide that relationship. And I think a lot of the film is about dealing with expectations.
Because they don't really address a lot of those issues, you know.
Well, Well, it's not militant about it.
Right.
But there is, you know, she is a little bit ashamed of it. I mean, she's trying to hide it from her parents.
And then she's trying to hide the other stuff. You know, it's a film about hiding your relationships, I think.
But I agree with Joe that I think the fact that they're both women is the hook. It brings you in, but then it almost becomes irrelevant that they're
totally
both women.
Irrelevant.
Yeah, at some point.
Yeah. I lost sight of the fact that
really? How can you lose sight of the fact?
Other than the bedroom scenes. But, I mean, the relationship stuff could have been between a guy and a gal. And I don't think it would have detracted had it been that way.
Yeah, I think it would have been a different film, though, is what I'm trying to say. I think the fact that it's about two women elevates it to a different place.
Yeah. And incidentally, the French title of the movie is La Vie d'Adèle.
The Life of Adèle, chapters
1 and 2. So I don't know if there's chapters 3 and 4 coming.
Oh, my God.
But I suspect not. But and, you know, for those who are interested, there's this whole backstory to the movie. If you want to read up online, you know, about how, Léa Seydoux, who plays Emma, won't talk to the director anymore. And she went on record saying, both the actors went on record saying they would never work with this director again. And he would take something like 100 to 110 takes. And this is a 3-hour movie. So, I mean, I find it fascinating, the making of the movie and where they are now. It's just fascinating.
Yeah, I haven't heard any of that stuff, so I have to check that out. All right, well, let's move on to our next movie of the week, which is Dallas Buyers Club. Rashmi?
So Matthew McConaughey stars in Dallas Buyers Club as real-life Texas cowboy Ron Woodruff, whose freewheeling life was overturned in 1985 when he was diagnosed as HIV positive and given only 30 days to live. So these were the early days of the AIDS epidemic, and the US was divided over how to actually combat the virus. So Ron, actually shunned and ostracized by many of his old friends, actually manages to sort of, you know, cash in on his entrepreneurial ways and join forces with an unlikely band of renegades and outcasts who he would have shunned at one time. And he actually established this hugely successful buyer's club. So this is directed by Jean-Marc Vallier and written by Craig Borton and Melissa Wallach. And it stars Matthew McConaughey, Jennifer Garner, and Jared Leto. So Yazdi, why don't you go first?
So this was a movie I was really looking forward to seeing. And there's absolutely no doubt about it. It features It features two somewhat showy but nevertheless undeniably amazing performances from Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto. But apart from that, I could not find anything else to admire in this film. I really wanted to like it, but it didn't let me. I'm sorry, this is not a winner in my books. And I so wanted to like this movie.
Joe?
I did like this movie, but I didn't see the greatness in it that has been talked about, other than, you know, it's a transformative role by McConaughey. So, again, you kind of look at these types of roles as Oscar bait. You know, he's lost, you know, a lot of weight here. He looks completely unlike himself in this movie. And I forget who did this a couple of years ago, similar type of...
Christian Bale did it.
Natalie Portman did it.
Natalie Portman.
Yeah, but there was somebody else who did something very similar to this, kind of lost a lot of weight to look sick. Anyway,
Tom Hanks did it for Philadelphia.
Yeah.
So it felt very much like one of those little vehicles that, you know, McConaughey was using. The movie itself was very enjoyable moment to moment. I think it just lacked a little bit of depth of emotionality. It was almost like a... I don't want to say made for TV, but it was a very gently made movie. I think it had a little bit of clumsy writing here and there. And while good, wasn't great.
I agree with both of you. I would say Matthew McConaughey is really thin. That's really the first thing I wrote. But that said, I think it's a good film that's only elevated by those two performances. That's what makes it most enjoyable to watch, those great performances by Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto. And I think Matthew McConaughey was really good. I think a lot of his performance came from the fact that he had transformed physically. But Jared Leto is the one that actually blew me away, because I think it's hard to play a character like that without becoming a caricature. And he played it perfectly for me. So I'm really hopeful that he's going to be nominated for Best Supporting. Brilliant performance.
Yeah, he's on the top of most people's prognostications about that category. But he's great in it. And by the way, anyway, we'll talk about this later. But my single biggest problem with this movie was with the lead character. And I think the film insists on celebrating him as some kind of, you know, hero and accidental prophet of sorts, you know. But I found nothing that this character did particularly heroic. I mean, he starts off being like a racist, miserable, misogynistic man. And then, you know, the movie's all the good...
Homophobic.
And all the good that he is credited to having done does not come from a place of goodness. It comes from a place of business. I mean,
Self-preservation.
Yeah. I mean, he did what he did because he saw a great business venture to make money out of setting up this Spires Club. And so, you know... I didn't see the arc for this story. He was a horrible person who kind of remained horrible, and the movie kind of tacks on a few things at the end, crediting him for doing something. But, you know, but he really selflessly never really does anything, you know, particularly good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the movie necessarily celebrates him as a hero, because, I mean, you're right, there's one or two Hallmark moments tweaked in towards the end, but I thought in that regard, it did portray him as this horrible guy that didn't seem to ever really learn any lessons. You know, I mean, he wasn't charitable in any of his dealings, right? I mean, you're right. It came completely from a business perspective.
I mean, I think the journey is really his relationship with the Jared Leto character. That's really the arc for me, you know, that he starts out homophobic, and not say that he's not homophobic by the end of it, but I think he realizes that there are people who you can rely on, and I feel like this it's the only person he actually develops a friendship with ultimately. So I feel like he's this lonely character who's totally void of friendship, and only engages in these casual sexual encounters, and that's the arc for me, that friendship.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's because, I mean, like you guys, you know, maybe it's because of my familiarity with the topic. I mean, having worked in developing drugs for HIV, I found the ethics of the movie actually questionable, because, you know, I think what this character did actually was pretty dangerous, because he, you know, these were products which were not, they were vitamins. Some of them were vitamins, and he was selling them to people who had full-blown AIDS, who didn't have access to any other drugs, but he took their lives in his hands in many ways. And so I don't think this is something which necessarily should be celebrated. I mean, I understand.
Plus, he brought them over the border illegally.
Right, he brought them over the border. And, you know, its politics are kind of muddled, because it initially starts off being this big diatribe about the fact that AZT was not made readily available when it was the first drug which came to market for treating HIV. But then the second half of the movie, this character is like militant in convincing everybody that AZT is a poison and it's going to destroy you and it's going to kill you. So what is it trying to say about the whole AIDS crisis? I mean, and that how it's toxic. And then he wanted everybody to switch from AZT and start taking these vitamins instead. I mean, people who are dying of a terminal disease, you're, you know, asking them to come off these drugs. So I don't want to get on a big soapbox, but that kind of prevented me from really embracing this character, because I'm like, what are you doing?
I mean, movies always take a cheap shot of pharma. And, you know, again, we're probably, like you keep, both of you just said, you know, we're probably sensitized to it, but it's a cheap shot when you villainize pharma and FDA. And I mean, I think the one thing the film did do well is capture perfectly the attitude towards AIDS in the 80s. So I think that's the one thing it did do very well.
And the desperation
of
people. Because,
yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
It was a disease that affected younger, otherwise healthy individuals.
I think the documentary How to Survive a Plague, I mean, if you want to watch a good movie about AIDS and how AZT was developed and what was going on at that time, I think that's a far more superior viewing experience than something like this.
You stole the words from my notes, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and the only other thing I want to say is that, you know, Fresh Air on NPR did this full-on one-hour interview with Jared Leto, based on, you know, all the press he's getting for this movie. And Leto comes across as so off-kilter. I mean, either, you know, he's being deliberately difficult or he's seriously deluded. But in any case, that interview is so fascinating. I mean, I wish...
Really?
Yeah, I recommend people to listen.
Can you put a link to it on our website,
maybe? I'll put a link to it. I mean, that interview for me was like about five times more entertaining than the movie itself. It's interesting. And then, you know, going back to the acting, it seems kind of gimmicky, like look, Ma, no hands kind of stuff, because I understand that he wanted to represent a man who was quickly getting very sick, very quickly. But this character starts off being very skinny. Mm-hmm. You know, from so right. McConaughey, even before he gets AIDS, is this really thin wisp of a man. So then why make poor Matthew McConaughey lose 60 pounds? Just hire a skinny actor. So it just seems like...
excessive.
It comes off like a trick. It seems gimmicky.
I think he chose to do that because he's in that place, right, where he is pushing what he himself thinks he can achieve as an actor. So personally, I think he got the role and then pushed himself as hard as he could to transform to being this character, you know, in the most extreme kind of method acting.
Right. I mean, a classic example of this is Robert De Niro in Raging Bull, where he lost a lot of weight for that. But there it was, you see him before and you see him after and you see that dramatic difference. But here you always see him skinny anyway.
But Raging Bull was done with Scorsese with a much, much, much bigger budget. This movie was probably made on a dime and shot in 2 weeks. So maybe they just didn't have the opportunity to do that.
Okay.
I'm going to defend.
Wind up. Yes, D.
I think one of the other problems I had with the movie, and this is part of my wind-up, is that, it's clearly fascinated with this period in time when he set up this Dallas Buyers Club. And that, it is fascinating that somebody actually did that and they kind of buckled the system and so forth. But then once it's done telling the story, the movie kind of doesn't know where to go.
Right.
And it kind of just whimpers along to an end. And so, you know, I wish they had thought more about how to tie up this very fascinating story. But be that as it may, I don't want to sound, you know, uncharitable, but I really do recommend people watch How to Survive a Plague instead. That's a really angry, you know, beautifully balanced story about how a few individuals went against the system, went against the FDA, forced the government essentially with their protests to get these drugs approved. And that's a far more moving, emotional, strong movie about the power of the individual action. So this movie is not that movie. I give it 5 out of 10.
Oh,
sorry.
No, that's a lot lower than I expected. I mean, I actually enjoyed this movie moment by moment. I think it's tuned to be a little bit of a crowd pleaser. You know, it has that kind of Aaron Brockovich type feel to it, you know. So I think the average moviegoer is going to enjoy this, and you know, I'm that person. So this movie gets a 7 out of 10 from me. Enjoyable, but just not great. I mean, it's carrying 94% on Rotten Tomatoes, which stuns me. Mm-hmm. There have been many movies this year much better than this that have scored much lower on the tomatometer.
And interestingly, none of us have even mentioned Jennifer Garner.
She's there.
Right, yeah. Exactly. But don't you think she always looks like she's always just about to cry in every movie?
Oh, I like her. I think she's sweet. But I think, again, she's not got a big role here. You know, she's actually the exposition character,
yeah,
right? She's
yeah.
the one explaining yeah. exactly what clinical trial process is. And so, you know, she has very wooden lines and she's somewhat of a wooden actress, so it's a good match.
Yeah. So I think ultimately this is more a story of a man just trying to beat the odds to survive. And so the situations we see the character in make for good movie viewing. But for me, I think I love the great performance by mm-hmm. Jared Leto. And if you don't watch it for anything else, then it's worth just watching for that. I see Oscars for both transformative performances. But overall, as a film, 7 out of 10.
And what's with that shaky cam? You know, you know, the movie has this shaky, which is fine. Everybody's doing it these days. And I understand.
GoPros.
And I understand it gives you a sense of actually being there. You know, it gives. But when there is a scene of somebody being examined in a doctor's office, the camera doesn't need to shake. Like there's an earthquake, you know, it just comes up looking inept. Like the cameraman couldn't hold the camera.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Oh, that's
I think
funny.
It's a stylistic choice from indie filmmakers. You know, I think it's often a lot less expensive to do that than, you know, rig things on tripods and dollies and have all this smooth motion. But yeah, it was distracting here. Yeah, good point. That's why Movie Wireless is audio only. we can't afford to do it properly. All right, let's wrap up the episode for today. Mail at moviewireless.com. Let us know what you think of Dallas Buyers Club and The Blue is the Warmest Color. Twitter.com/moviewireless, Facebook.com/moviewireless as well. As always, too many movies, too little time. I'm going to say good night.
Good night.
And good night from me as well.